Well, hey, good to have you with me this morning for our 8-minute mind shift. Last week we talked about the whole idea of the children of Israel, and I shared a story that pertained to one of my daughters. And, you know, I had her permission to share the story, but I talked to her afterwards, and she said, you know, no problem, loved it. But she said, you didn't answer the questions. Like, how do I see God? How do I see myself? And the particular one she was referring to was, what do I have to do to please God and get my needs met? You know, here's the deal. We're going to talk about that for a minute because I thought it was a good thing to do. But remember, this is called 8-minute mind shift. My point being that all I'm trying to do is week after week after week, I'm going to throw information at you, and I throw more at you than you can take in, quite honestly. But that's the cool thing about technology now. You can come back later. You can, you can re-listen to it eventually. And this is just me and technology. Eventually, I'm going to learn how to have the notes available where you can download them and have them for yourself for later reference. So remember the story last week, and if you didn't hear last week, go ahead, go back and listen to it. But my daughter having a rough week, and bottom line, as I said, well, you know, answer, whenever you find yourself unsettled in a bad place and you can't figure out how you got there, use these three questions to center yourself and kind of reboot your heart, you might say. So question number one was, how do I see God? I'm in a bad place. I'm a journaler. This is I've got my journal sitting right over here. And so for instance, I would take that and I would write it out. How do I see God? And then I would look at that and say, okay, how do I see God right now? And depending on what the last few days have been like, I might think he's upset with me. I might think he's displeased with me, disappointed in me, whatever. And what I've learned to do is develop a very consistent sense of what God's like. In John 14:9, the last part of the verse, Jesus said, "He who has seen me has seen the Father." In other words, Jesus said, if you've really seen me and how I act and react and how I handle different situations, that's what God's like. That's what the Father's like. And I'm kind of a word freak. Like, I love to look words up. So I looked up that word seen in the Strong's Concordance. I don't know Greek and Hebrew, but I can sure, you know, use my phone to look it up. And it's interesting what the word seen, he who has seen me, Jesus said, seen me, has seen the Father. Well, here's what the word seen means. It means to stare at, like stare at with your full attention. It means, listen to this, and I love this one. It means to become acquainted with through experience over time. It means to become acquainted with through experience over time. One of my pet peeves is that we seem to think that discipleship is about acquiring information. If information made us more like Jesus, we'd see thousands and thousands and millions of Jesuses walking all over America because we are inundated with information. Information is not what changes us. It's truth that we experience as real. So Jesus was saying, if you've experienced me and become acquainted with me over time, you've experienced the Father and become acquainted with him over time. 1 John 4:16 says this, we have come to know and believe. We've come to know. In other words, it's a process. We have, over time, we have acquired knowledge and beliefs. And man, are we going to talk about that as we do this in the weeks ahead. But again, that word know there is not the way we apply it in Western society or culture now. That word know is to become acquainted with through experience and time, to build a relationship with. Oh my gosh, that's what it means to know God. Not about God, but to know God. So how do I see God? I read the Gospels and I watch Jesus. And I hear this in my head. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So what does that do for me? Well, I just watch Jesus and I say, you know, I don't remember him ever getting mad at anybody except the people who thought they were doing okay. And then I go like this, well, I don't pretty much ever think I'm doing okay. So you know what? I don't think he's mad at me. And I just have this simple, joyful sense of God's pleasure in me. So number one, how do I see God? Number two, how do I see myself? I believe all of us have a filter that we see ourselves through. Genesis 3:10, third chapter of the book, way back early in the story, says, after the fall, God came to walk with Adam and Eve, and they hid from him. And he said, where are you? And this was their answer. I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. And here's what I think. I think the default settings of the human soul, you, me, everybody, our natural inclination is to live in fear of rejection, shame, and isolation. Fear, shame, and isolation. So I believe we have to deal with the reality that how do I see myself? I start typically seeing myself through a filter of fear, meaning I don't measure up. Here's how I say it in modern language. I'm afraid that if you really get to know me, you won't like me. So I hide. So I believe that's where we start. Listen to this statement. We'll talk about this more as we go along. Comparison is the root of all inferiority. What gets us in trouble is we compare ourselves to other people. And of course, in the process, we don't come out so great. And we just feel bad about ourselves. There's a statement that psychologists or sociologists use. It's called the looking glass self. And here's what it is. You become what the most important person in your life thinks you are. You become what the most important person in your life thinks you are. Whose opinion matters more to you than anyone else's? I know you know what the right answer is. Here's another way to look at that. Whoever's words define you is your God. I've told you before that my father would say, you're lazy and you'll never amount to anything. Well, that defined me literally for decades. I believed that I was lazy and I became what the most important person in my life thought I was. Here's another way to say it. Whoever's expectations drive you is your God. Well, I have to do this. I have to be good at this. I have to walk this line. I have to reach these standards. And whoever's expectations, what if it's the culture around us? I have to have a certain kind of house, car, clothes, friends. And then here's another one that probably fits better there. Whosever scorecard you use to measure yourself is your God. Like I think about it this way. Remember, I can't remember, Snow White, I think it is. And the Wicked Witch or whatever says, mirror, mirror on the wall, she says, fairest of them all. But what I'm saying to you this morning is, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the blank? Whose scorecard do you use? Who's the prettiest? Who's the smartest? Who's got the biggest church? Who's got the most money? What scorecard do you use to measure yourself? And my deal is, I just want to agree with God. The word confess means to say the same thing as. I just want to say about myself what God says about me. I want to value what he values. And you know what? He values you and he values me. I want my identity to be this simple statement. I'm the one Jesus loves. Now, the truth is, you can be too. You are, actually. But hey, who are you? What are you? I'm the one Jesus loves. Wouldn't that be cool to put it on a business card? I'm the one Jesus loves. All right, third question. What do I have to do to please God and get my needs met? Here's a cool verse for you. John 16, Jesus talking about prayer, but then he says something really cool. In that day, you will ask in my name, and I don't say to you that I will request of the Father on your behalf. In other words, you're going to pray, but you're not going to pray like, bring it to me and then I'll bring it to God. He says, you just talk directly to God. And then here's what he says. For the Father himself loves you. The Father himself loves you. The Father himself loves you. Now, what's cool is he goes on to say, because. So how many think it's pretty important, man? Oh my gosh, we're about to hear why, the because, the cause of God's love for me. For the Father himself loves you because you loved me. Jesus talking. The Father himself loves you because you've chosen to love me, Jesus, and you've believed that I came forth from. Okay, time out. Dude, are you saying to anybody listening that what it takes to please the Father is believing in his Son and walking toward and into and developing a love relationship with God? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, you don't think we have to do this and do that and stop this and stop that? Here's the deal. Come on, man. Here's the deal. If you believe Jesus is the Son, if you commit yourself to developing a love affair with God, you're going to stop anything you need to stop, and you're going to start everything you need to start. If you focus on stopping and starting, you'll lose love. If you focus on love, you'll do all the stopping and starting you need to do. Here's an interesting little formula for you. I know I'm going a little bit long. Jesus plus anything equals nothing. Jesus plus anything equals nothing. If you try to add anything to what Jesus has done for you, you're dishonoring what he's done for you. You've got to make it, settle it. Did Jesus do enough for me to be completely forgiven and able to walk into the presence of Almighty Holy God with no sense of sin, shame, or guilt? My answer, yes. Love you guys, and look forward to seeing you next week.